In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss email list building from zero to 1,000. This is part two in the series. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 239. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, sir?
Well, today I'm coming to you with a little bit of Star Wars trivia. What is the internal temperature of a Tauntaun? Lukewarm.
Boom. We need a rim shot right there.
If you want to hear that or any other terrible MicroConf jokes, you're going to have to go over to MicroConfEurope.com, sign up for the mailing list. We're going to be sending out emails pretty shortly about MicroConf Europe, how you can get tickets for that, and hear more of our terrible jokes and hopefully learn some stuff to help further your bootstrapped entrepreneurial endeavors. How about you this week?
Well, this week I have some good news and some bad news. The good news is that Drip was featured in a VentureBeat report on marketing automation. And with a few hundred different marketing automation tools, they chose around 20 or 25, and Drip was one. And then they actually recommended Drip as the go-to for small and medium-sized businesses. So that was, I think, about a week and a half ago that went live. So that feels good.
That's really cool.
That was the good news. The bad news is Hittail interfaces with Google using a certain type of API log, and I won't go into the details here because it's kind of all arcane stuff, but in essence, they deprecated it, and I didn't know it was deprecated. And so this morning we wake up and Hittail's struggling to connect to Google and import keywords, which is its core function. So we're scrambling now to integrate the newer form and try to get that live as soon as possible.
You'd think that Google would send out an email about something like that to the people who were using it.
Well, see, I don't know. And that's the trouble, is I don't know if they know who is using it, because it's not like we had to set up an account to do this. It was just kind of this programmatic way of integrating. So it's a bummer. I mean, it feels like every, let's say, 2 to 4 months with one of my apps runs into some type of issue like this, whether it's an issue with an API that stops working, or it's a scaling issue, or it's someone misusing your service, or just some kind of semi-random thing that kind of takes you off your game, stops you from developing new features, takes your eye off the ball, and yeah, everybody has to scramble to kind of make up for it.
If it's not one thing, it's another.
Indeed.
Well, I think today we're going to be diving into part two of our series on email list building. And today we're going to start off by talking about how to get from 101 to 1,000. And there's a lot of different techniques that we're going to be talking about. Some of them will be applicable to what you're doing. Some of them won't. And I think the key here is to really take a hard look at each of these and try to identify whether or not it's a strategy that is going to meet your needs to take your mailing list to that level. And like I said, some of them are not going to work for you just based on the type of mailing list that you're using. So for example, there's certain social networks that are probably not going to work very well for enterprise software. And then there's other types of techniques like video marketing or webinars and things like that that would work really well for that. So it's really a matter of identifying what the type of mailing list you have is, who the audience is, and whether or not some of these different strategies fit into those paradigms for you.
And if you haven't listened to episode 238, that was the previous episode, and it was part one of this discussion where we talked about how to get from zero to 100 email subscribers, and gave some techniques building up in blocks of 10 or 20, and now we're going to take it to the next level and try to 10x that. And as Mike said, this is essentially a big list of marketing tactics. It's marketing approaches, and it kind of kills me when I hear on Twitter, "Hey guys, I've set up a landing page, I'm going to collect emails, how should I build the list?" Because that question is so huge. Like, we could seriously sit here for a few hours and discuss every marketing approach that there is, because all of them are intended to drive traffic somewhere, right? And they're intended to drive traffic, whether it's to convert someone to a trial of your app, or to get someone on your product list if you already have a product, or to get someone on your launch list. Almost all of them apply to all of those things. So asking, how should I build my mailing list, is a lot like asking, how should I market my product, which is an enormous, enormous topic that multiple books have been written on. So what we've done is cherry-picked what I consider kind of the best approaches. These are I think all online approaches, there may be one or two offline, but it's the best approaches that we see working today with folks who are trying to build either that product list, if you've already launched and you want to get a notification list to send blog posts to or product updates, actionable content, good stuff for them, but then also a few mentions of your product here and there, or if you're trying to build that launch list around a product that has yet to launch.
So to start off with, I think the first one that we came up with is leveraging existing startup lists. And to do something like this, what you would do is you'd post links to your landing pages on relevant websites. And that would include things like Reddit, Hacker News, Product Hunt, Launch List, Beta List, et cetera. And there are hundreds of these, not just a couple or a couple dozen. I mean, there are literally hundreds of websites that you can post your website to or your landing pages to and do product announcements. Now, some of those are going to work better than others. So there's varying levels of activity. So for example, something like Reddit gets a lot of traffic, same with Hacker News or Lifehacker or Product Hunt. And then there's also the other factor that you have to take into account, which is how targeted is that list going to be? Like that traffic that's coming in from that source, are they going to care about whatever it is that you're offering? So if you were to go to, for example, securityweek.com, for example, and you were pitching a product that has something to do with email marketing, it's probably not going to convert very well. There's not going to be a lot of people who come over, even though there is a lot of traffic on that site. But there are others that you can go to, and you can start leveraging those to start driving traffic to your site. And there is, we'll link this up in the show notes, but Robert Graham from Whitetail Software had previously put together a list of these pre-launch email list building directories. As I said, we'll link it up in the show notes, and you can go over there, check it out. There's probably 60 or 70 of them on that list, something like that. But there's a lot of good information there, and it serves as a good starting point for you to start doing those submissions.
And the nice part about the list that Robert put together is it's broken up into beta, launched, beta or launched. And there's some SaaS and software. There's several different categories here. And so you can choose the categories based on where you are with your app. The nice part about doing this is you can either do it yourself one evening while you're watching Game of Thrones, or you can have a virtual assistant do it if you provide them with all the information. It's not hard work, and it will yield some signups. As you said, they may not ever convert to paying customers, but this is something that I do. This is kind of on all of my marketing plans when I'm going to launch a new app. There's really no reason not to do it because it is such low-hanging fruit.
The second strategy that you can try to leverage is content marketing. And content marketing by itself is just a huge topic, but really you have to start small. You start with a blog and you start posting content to that blog and into your autoresponders. And this helps with a couple of different things. And it's a long-term strategy. It's not something that you're going to do short-term and you're going to expect that you post one or two blog posts and suddenly you're going to go to 1,000 people on your list. But it can help you with long-term SEO. It can increase the overall footprint of your website and your content marketing strategies, and essentially helps you move the business forward. Now, again, this is a long-term strategy. This isn't just do it once and forget it. This is something that you're going to want to invest in over time and make sure that you're going to be able to put a process in place where this will carry forward even after you're done building that initial list or hitting that initial goal. You're probably going to want to take this and carry it forward and keep driving people to that email list.
So I haven't done this one with a pre-launch product. So for example, with Drip, we had a landing page before the product was built. And ideally, it would have been nice to get a blog up around that so that you start building that SEO footprint. But I was never able to do that. I don't think it's something that will pay off early, like you said. It's something that's more of a long-term process. I think it's possible. I think Mint.com did this well, actually. They had quite a bit of budget, and they did get a blog up even before they launched, and they got that flywheel going. I don't know of many bootstrappers who have the funds or the bandwidth to be able to be building a product, planning for marketing, getting a pre-launch landing page up, and have someone blogging or be blogging themselves. So I think that's quite a bit to bite off, given how time-intensive and or cost-intensive good content marketing is. Post-launch, once you have revenue and customers and you know your customers and you know what they want, you have a lot more certainty in what you're doing. And this is where we've had a lot of luck with this. There's good examples of like Kissmetrics and BidSketch and Groove are all really good examples, and Baremetrics as another, good examples of SaaS apps that do content marketing, and it's blog posts for their audience, and it drives traffic over time through a lot of social shares, and then you can easily build up that email list, and then you use that email list to perpetuate itself. The larger it gets, you can notify people when new posts come out, and then give mention infrequently of an awesome new feature that your product has. But some people don't like the term content marketing. They just want to blog about whatever interests them, and that's fine. You don't have to call it content marketing, but it's a short phrase for this idea of being able to write good stuff and draw people to your site and hopefully get a few more of them on your mailing list.
The other thing that you can kind of insert in there, in addition to the occasional mention, is something that people can use specifically in their startup or in their business, and it is a problem that would be addressed by your product. I think there's a difference between doing kind of a pitch for your product with this list and embedded into that content versus saying, hey, there's this problem that a lot of people have, and here's how you can solve it. And by the way, our product also does this. So if there are ways to kind of leverage those thoughts or ideas into those types of posts, then the social shares alone should help with that, especially when your list starts getting large.
And another tip is within Drip, when we're sending these out, we actually have a liquid template if statement at the bottom of the email that only shows up to folks who are not currently customers. And so it says, if the person is not a customer, then say, hey, we noticed you haven't used Drip. If you're interested, you know, sign up for a trial. And so it is, typically I put that in the PS, right, instead of in the body of the email. I like your approach to teaching and tying it in. I think that's optimal. And then having some maybe stuff specific for non-trial users and non-customers that does in fact pitch and link to your trial sign-up page can be definitely useful in this type of context.
Next on the list of strategies is leveraging a contest or a giveaway. And the interesting part about contests and giveaways is that typically it's tricky. And the reason it's tricky is because if you have a contest that you're running, and let's say that everybody who enters gets a chance to win, the problem is that there's no incentive for people to invite other people to come in and also enter into the contest. So it's essentially, there's a disincentive for people to share it because of the fact that if, let's say that there's 100 people in there and you're one of them, and the company asks you to share it, well, now by inviting your friends, let's say you invite two or three people, you're less likely to win. But there's a nice little trick that you can use to give them additional chances to win if they get other people signed up. So let's say that for each person that they get signed up, they get an additional three chances to win or something like that. And I believe that that idea came from Noah Kagan of AppSumo. I think that they've got a plugin over on SumoMe that allows you to do something like that. So that's definitely something to look into when you're trying to do something like this. But in terms of the giveaway itself, there's lots of things that you can give away. You can give away a free book bundle. You can give away gift cards. You can give away one-on-one consulting. You can give away licenses to your product or anything along those lines that you feel is going to be helpful for your customers or the people who are coming to your list. Now, again, it really depends on what type of product you have and what the people are interested in that are joining your mailing list, but there are a lot of different things that you could come up with to essentially sweeten the deal for people to sign up.
I personally have not run a contest like this. I am innately skeptical about it because if you're going to give something away, let's say a MacBook Air or an iPad or whatever it is, I know that you're going to get a bunch of people who are signing up for that and don't really want to hear from you. And so it's going to dramatically lessen the quality of your list. So I would certainly segment this out from my main list and kind of allow the giveaway to happen and then start pruning that list quickly because you don't want a list with a 10% open rate or a 1% click-through rate or high bounce rates and high unsubscribe rates. It just doesn't do well for your deliverability. But with that said, I have talked to a few people who've run contests and have had success at it. The thing to think about is that it will spike your email list really high. And then if you wind up with even, let's say, half of those or a third of those sticking around and being somewhat engaged, then you're probably doing pretty well. So I agree. I think this is something that's worth doing. It's been kind of in the back of my mind as something to try for a while. I just think you'll want to think through it and do it well and do more research on folks who've done this successfully and the steps they've taken to make it work.
So my inclination for something like this is that kind of agree with you on being a little bit skeptical about how well this would work. But remember back to the beginning of this podcast episode where we talked about the type of list that you're building and the type of product that you have is going to make a big difference here. And my inclination is that contests and giveaways are probably going to do much better in a B2C offering than a B2B offering. I don't know for sure, but that's my inclination. That's my general impression about that.
Yeah, I think they will do better in the more B2C or B2 kind of beginner. Maybe it is B2B, but it's kind of folks who are just getting into X, just getting into becoming designers or entrepreneurs or photographers or whatever. So they are still more of the consumer mindset. However, the two people I was thinking of who have run contests to a level of success, both had, in essence, more B2B topics. And maybe that is why only a third of their folks stuck around afterwards. Maybe a bunch of folks came in just to enter for the MacBook and didn't really want to hear about their B2B offering. But this one, I think, yeah, like I said, I think it deserves a little more research and some time to think about.
The next strategy on our list is leveraging social networks. And you talk about social networks and you almost come down to like the big three. There's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. But there are tons and tons of other social networks that you can leverage. There's Tumblr, there's Pinterest, there's StumbleUpon. The list goes on and on. And I think the key with social networks is that if you're going to dabble in social networking, you really have to post content to it pretty regularly. You have to make sure that you're staying on people's radar and that you're using special offers like lead magnets that almost require an email sign up. So you use those social networks to get in front of people, and you really want to be driving people to an email list, because just getting in front of them is not necessarily going to help you a whole lot. But at the same time, you really want to make sure that you're getting contact information from them and doing so in a way that is not, I'll say, over the top or not too much in people's faces, because you can burn out that audience. You don't want to go to the point where you're burning them out and you're not going to be front of mind because they start tuning you out. I do know somebody who has used, I think it's Instagram, to gain some pretty massive followings on through Instagram, and they've been able to verifiably boost sales by a huge percentage. And I was kind of shocked when I heard the story and heard a lot of the details about it. But it's crazy the amount of things that you can do on these social networks. And there are definitely ways that you can leverage them to drive people through to your site and start getting them on your mailing list.
Yeah, I've always thought of social networks as kind of a hub and spoke model, where my hub is my website that I own and my email list that I own. And then the social networks are all just traffic devices, right? They are the spokes surrounding that. And so, as you said, driving folks back to get them on your email list is always my number one goal. And if you want to see some folks who are using Twitter well in this fashion, in more of a B2B fashion, go to the folks that I showed earlier who are doing content marketing really well, because content marketing and social networks go hand in hand. And so look at the Kissmetrics, the BidSketch, the Groove, and, you know, Drip's doing so-so on Twitter right now. It's not growing super fast, but we definitely have a decent sized audience and are able to drive folks back and get some engagement with some of our posts. The nice part is Google is once again using the Twitter fire hose and putting it in search results. And that tells me that they are probably also using this as some type of ranking factor. So if you have a blog that's a ghost town and no one's sharing it socially, then odds are good that it's going to get a little bit of a ding, or it's not going to get the plus of having, let's say, each of your blog posts get tweeted even 5 times or 10 times. That's going to be a signal to Google that real people are using your account. And I think of social networks as being used in multiple different ways. The one idea is to send folks back to build your mailing list. I mean, it's also a good way just to engage with folks who are talking about your product online, right? And you can get in conversations. Sometimes feature requests or support requests come through, and that's a little harder. It's pretty hard to do support at 140 characters at a time. So I tend to try to get into email discussions with folks when they do that. But I think that the conversations that can be had are often worthwhile. It's hard to lead this back to some type of return on investment based on the amount of time that you might have to spend on it. And so if you don't have a ton of time to devote to something, this would not be at the top of my list for building your email list. I think there are a lot more effective ways that we are going to talk about today. But I do think that, especially if you're B2B and in the tech space, that being on Twitter at a minimum is probably just par for the course.
Yeah, kind of relating social networks back to the content marketing, it seems like it's much more of a long-term strategy, and there might be some quick wins that you can get to drive people over. But in some ways, it almost feels like this might be a strategy similar to content marketing, where it works better if you're larger. It takes you from the 1,001 to 10,000 or 50,000 or something along those lines. Next on our list is video marketing. And I think with video marketing, you essentially choose a platform of your choice, and you can throw out all the different video platform providers, things like Wistia and Vimeo and YouTube, and essentially leverage those to either make videos of yourself or do interviews or screencasts or online webinars. There's lots of different ways to use video of something to put in front of your audience and then leverage those things to drive traffic to those videos and then put some sort of an email capture in place or a sign-up form that allows people to view the videos. I've used this on a couple of different apps. I even went so far as to create a video course. I think you've got a couple of video courses you've done as well. And the videos, I think it's hit and miss sometimes. There are certain things that will resonate really, really well. And there are certain things that just for whatever reason, they just don't.
Yeah, I think video marketing works really well in the B2C space. I mean, that's where all the YouTube stars come about. I've heard of some B2B players doing it, but it's always the same examples, right? It's the Will It Blend guys or Red Bull or kind of some big corporation doing something. I know that there's room here for a smaller B2B player to have videos. And I guess maybe like SEO Moz, not that they're that small, but they're not Fortune 500 size, right? Moz does the Whiteboard Fridays that have been, frankly, just excellent and very consistent over the past several years. And I kind of think of video marketing in that way, a bit just like a video podcast, right? It's kind of a weekly thing that you release like clockwork. And I think that if you're providing value in an entertaining way and you provide a unique voice on something, then having the recurring nature of video marketing, I think, can be powerful. I also agree with you on webinars. I guess you have to have some expertise or some credentials so that folks know to trust you. But once you have that, if you can kind of stack your funnel through other means and get folks to come to a webinar, you do build a tremendous amount of trust if you make a good presentation and you make a good case for something and you offer a lot of value in that webinar. You can definitely build your list quickly by advertising a free webinar like that. Even just building the webinar list itself, you can build a list. And then beyond that, it just creates more engagement. And I bet you get more opens and clicks in your overall list after doing a webinar.
Well, yeah, I mean, that brings up an interesting point is, do you ask for the email before or after? And I think that it depends on whether or not you're doing a video versus a webinar. Because so when I'm running webinars, what I do is I will drive people to a landing page and then ask them their further contact information so that I can let them know when and where the webinar will be. And it's usually like a live demo or a presentation or something along those lines. And that way I've got their contact information and I can create a follow-up sequence. And I talked to a couple of other people about this as well in terms of what their emails to actual attendees were. And it seems like it's about somewhere between 30 and 50% is pretty average. If you get over 50% for a webinar where people have signed up for it and then you're emailing them about it the day before and then the day of and then maybe an hour before, the sign-up percentage to the people who actually attend is only about 30 to 40%. I've seen lower as well. I've seen as low as 20, but it does work. I mean, you can get people to sign up for those webinars. But once you've got their email address, then you can continue to market additional stuff to them. And that's really the point of this, is getting their email address first. Now, I think if you go the other direction and you put in like a turnstile or something like that, either at the beginning of a video or at the end of a video, there's varying levels of success with that. Wistia has some pretty good contextual information about whether or not it's better to do it. But again, I mean, it's all relative and based on what it is that you're doing, what the product is that you're trying to sell. Some of the data is just a little, I don't want to say it's misleading, but it's just, it's very sensitive. So I don't know if there's any hard conclusions to draw from it. I mean, you really kind of have to test it based on what your market is and figure out which approach works, whether it's better to do it at the beginning or at the end.
And this is also the time to ask yourself, what is your unique gifting? Are you good at writing awesome blog posts? Are you good at interacting with people on Twitter? Are you good at standing in front of a video camera and doing a whiteboard presentation like Rand Fishkin does? Kind of whatever. I've heard he just does it right off the cuff, writes some things, and then spits it out to the camera. Depending on your gifting, you're going to want to lean towards that approach, because all of these are things that you're going to do over time. You're either going to do them every week or you're going to do them on a quarterly basis or maybe a twice a year basis in terms of like maybe a contest or something like that. But each of these you're going to have to get good at. It's going to be an acquired skill. And so it's something you're going to do often. So don't pick something that is a fad that is not going to be interesting or exciting for you or that you're going to be really bad at, because then it's not going to be successful.
The next strategy in our list is leveraging other people's networks. And by other people's, it doesn't necessarily mean just people, but it can also be other companies. So if you want to do a guest blog post on, for example, the Kissmetrics blog, you would talk to them. If you want to do something over on the Groove blog, you would talk to them about it. And some people are going to be open to it and some people are not. But the key is to recognize whether or not your audience is going to overlap with theirs and whether or not there's enough value that you can provide to them that is going to encourage them to essentially let you come on and talk to their audience. Because the reality is they're giving you a certain amount of trust. And regardless of the additional vetting process that they put in place to take a look at your content, make sure that whatever's going out to their audience is appropriate for it, the fact is that they want to make sure that you're going to be delivering that value. And they may say yes up front and then say no later on based on what they actually see. But hopefully you can find and identify those people and work with them to get through those types of issues and put your message in front of them and hopefully drive some traffic back to your website. And you really want to be able to capture those email leads. And some of this is a little tricky because if you go and post something on, for example, the Kissmetrics blog, they really want to keep people there. So it's going to be a little bit difficult for you to drive traffic back to your website and capture leads because they want to be able to do that. But you can put in like a little byline that maybe gets a link back to your site and essentially helps to establish some authorities. Then you can use it to say, I've got this authority because I've been published over on the Kissmetrics blog, for example. And I think that those are definitely things that you can use to help create additional trust on your site to help get people to sign up for the things on your landing pages. Another option is using joint ventures with people. So if you do a joint webinar series with people or a podcast episode or anything along those lines, there's lots of different ways to essentially get in front of other people's audiences and then use those to essentially pump up your own audience.
Yeah, in terms of my concentric circle marketing approach, this is that second circle. So it's outside of your own audience, but you can start with friends that you have, like colleagues in your network, right? And then branch out to then colleagues or folks who you don't know. So they're not even warm leads, but it's kind of a cold pitch to Copyblogger or Kissmetrics or Unbounce's blog or, you know, whoever you do want to guest post for. And as long as you have some examples of your work, I've found that it's not that hard if you have high quality writing to go in with a cold pitch and get a decent guest post. Now, there's some kind of scare going on where Matt Cutts had made a comment that like guest posting was going to soon be seen as spam. And that has not happened. High quality guest posts, as far as I can see, are still high quality guest posts and they work really well. So that's not something that I have been too concerned about. I think spammy guest posts, like anything, are being found out and Google is smarter than the spammers in essence and will eventually catch you. But if you're actually doing high quality stuff, then this is kind of a no-brainer. I've used this for a number of products and done quite a bit of guest posting, as well as joint ventures and everything you mentioned. And I think this is a no-brainer. This is a little harder to do if you're pre-launch, but it's not impossible to do. Certainly the joint venture, something you're going to want to do post-launch.
Next on our list, we have paid advertising. And I think paid advertising is one of those things you really want to stay away from until you get some idea of what your leads are worth to you. But it could be valuable to at least start experimenting with it early on just to kind of figure out and get a ballpark idea of how much some of those leads are going to cost you so that you can kind of reverse engineer what your sales funnel looks like. But there's lots of different ways that you can go about paid advertising, and there's numerous channels that you can go through. I think that I would almost pull in remarketing into paid advertising as well, because you can leverage people who visited your site and then market to them later to try and drive them back to a landing page or a mailing list later on and get their contact information so that you can market to them directly later on. But going back to just the concept of 101 to 1,000, paid advertising can definitely work in that lower range. I mean, as you scale it up, obviously it's going to cost you a heck of a lot more to start gaining those leads, but early on, it's really not that hard to start using paid advertising to start gathering email addresses. It's just a matter of your budget at that point and how much budget do you have to allocate to that. I think the last time I did some Twitter ads, it cost me around $4 a lead or something like that. And that was for my book launch. And I probably spent around $1,500 or so to get around 400 to 450 leads. So it's definitely possible and it's not terribly expensive to do it. But again, you have to have the time to do it and you have to have the money sitting around in order to be able to use that strategy.
Yeah, I'm a fan of paid acquisition. This can work with both pre-launch and post-launch products. I drove a ton of pre-launch email signups to drip I think it was somewhere between 500 and 1,000 of the emails that were on the list came from Facebook ads. And there's several networks out there that are worth exploring. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and AdWords are probably the top four that I would look at, especially if you're B2B. And yes, even B2B ads can work well on Facebook if you target the right audiences. Nice part about paid acquisition is you can turn it on and off very quickly. So it's like a faucet. It doesn't have to be a long-term strategy, but it can become that if you can figure out your ROI and drive a lot of traffic. There's a lot to be said on each of those topics. What I do is, since this stuff changes every 6 months so dramatically, is I don't keep up on it when I'm not doing it. But if I decide I'm going to go back in and run a Twitter campaign or a Facebook campaign, then I try to find who's the expert today, who are the folks with the podcasts and the blogs on this, and try to buy one of their courses, because they're going to have the most up-to-date information on exactly how to tweak the dials and the knobs in order to make a paid advertising campaign work for that specific network.
So we're starting to wind down our list a little bit here. And the next one we have is offline or in-person events. And I think for offline or in-person events, you can use things like meetup.com, or you can use joint ventures with existing businesses. To me, this seems much more like a localized strategy than anything else. So if you have a retail store or a physical presence someplace, this is probably going to be a lot more effective than if you have just an online presence, or you're a software company or marketing company where you're selling something solely online. It's probably not nearly as effective for those types of things. But if you're a consultant who works locally or a freelancer and you're trying to land local business clients, then it can be highly effective to offer a presentation or a free seminar or anything like that. You can also talk to local workshops or work groups. There's lots of small business associations throughout the country, and almost no matter what country you're in, there's almost always a small business association of some kind. And you can talk to them and find out more about what their audience is and how they get in front of people, and talk to them and say, hey, you know, I'd like to do a free seminar on X. And you just ask people for their contact information once you get there.
I think this also includes conferences. I mean, we were at the MS Build conference a few weeks ago. Not something I would typically do to buy a booth at a conference, but we happened to get it included in a kind of a partnership deal we were doing with Microsoft. And so it was nice to be able to meet some folks. And we did, in fact, add people to our mailing list based on this with their permission. And we're now interfacing with them, whether to get them to check Drip out, or there were several partnerships that could potentially come out of that, of folks wanting to offer Drip to their customer list, which is obviously the more lucrative thing. Instead of trying to find one-off deals, is to actually interface with their audiences. And so offline events, I think, are so important for that networking side and for the getting that face-to-face contact that we have so little of these days with social media and webinars and all that stuff. I think there's a real value to meeting someone in person.
Next up, we have tweaking your website. And by this, we essentially mean make sure that the call to actions and the lead capture is on your website, and that it's available for everybody across the different browsers. And make sure that you take a really hard look at the call to action to make sure that each page has a single function. And that function, in most cases, is to take them from one place to another. But in many cases, the function of that page is going to be to get somebody's email address. And it's not necessarily to sell them something. It's really because you want to be able to follow up with them. I think, Rob, you did a really good talk at Business of Software a number of years ago where, I forget the exact title, but I think it was the number one goal of your website is not to sell them something. I'm totally butchering it at this point, but the whole talk was about the number one goal of your sales website is not actually to sell somebody something. It's to get their contact information so that you can follow up on it later. Why don't you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that talk was just based on the idea that you don't sell very many things to first-time visitors, and you sell, the majority of your sales are going to come to folks who have been to your website multiple times. And so getting folks back to your website is really the number one goal, rather than trying to make the sale too soon. And asking for the sale too soon is a real danger. It'll drive people away. If you're kind of up in their face asking for money with the buy now buttons, and you don't get their email, or you don't get a way to connect with them later, then you're going to leave a lot of money on the table. And so building your email list, I mean, is really the whole point of kind of this episode and the last episode. I know we've talked about doing it as a pre-launch thing, but frankly, it's the same thing, right? It's just getting permission to contact folks and get them to come back to your site when it launches, or if you're already launched, it's to educate them and build a relationship with them over time, provide them a ton of value. And then as they come back, and once they're really ready to kind of move into your product's market. So let's say they're already using MailChimp and they're just thinking about switching to a different email provider, but it might take them 3 months or 6 months to make that decision. And if you've been sending them an email newsletter every week with some pretty valuable content, then you're going to be top of mind when they do in fact decide to change. Because most of these decisions to buy a product or to switch from one product to another don't happen instantly. They don't happen in the 10 seconds that someone has between lunch and their first meeting after they get back from lunch. They don't decide it that quickly. And so getting their email address and being able to reconnect with them is really where the value comes. And to round out our approaches for today, I had added the invitation viral loop. And the idea here is that if you're pre-launch, you've probably seen some places where you put in your email address and then it says, hey, you know, you're on our list. We'd love it if you'd tell other folks about it. You can either just ask nicely, which won't result in a ton of shares. But if you have a really sought after product, you can run it almost like a contest where the more people who this person signs up, the higher they move in the list, the higher the priority. So they get the access to it first. And again, this only works with something that folks really want to get access to. But I've seen a bunch of kind of B2C or B2B companies use this to effect, and it can help build your pre-launch list faster than if you were just trying to find folks one-off.
I think this is an interesting concept. I know Kickoff Labs does it, but they do it directly as part of the sign-up. So when you first sign up for a mailing list, it immediately asks you to share it with your friends. And I think that that works in certain scenarios. And I think that there's other scenarios where you essentially have to provide the value before somebody's willing to essentially spend their social credit in order to invite their friends or talk to their social networks about whatever it is that you're offering. For this particular thing, think about what it is that you're offering and whether or not it makes sense to have them share it up front or ask them down the road. And I think that there's opportunities for both of those things. You just have to think about which one applies to your situation. And I think last on our list is we had an interview with Gabriel Weinberg a while back, and we were talking to him about his book called Traction. And I think that virtually every approach in the Traction book is also something that you can use to try and help build your email list. So we won't recap that, but we will link it up in the show notes so that you can go take a look at that episode and find out more about it.
As we said at the beginning of this episode could go on forever because it's essentially a long list of different marketing approaches. It's the how do I market my product? How do I build my email list question? It's a very large question. And for me, I put together a marketing plan in a Google Doc so that I can capture all these ideas and figure out which ones are working and figure out what ideas I hear on a podcast or in an audiobook or somewhere else that I think I totally want to try that. So typically I'll email it to myself. So it's in my Trello board. And then later on, I'll transfer that into a marketing plan that's more of my long-term vision of what I want to do over the next couple of years as I have time. And then as soon as I have bandwidth, as soon as I want to try that next marketing approach, then I pull it out of that marketing plan and I go after it. The short list, this is what we see as the low-hanging fruit for building your email list and basically marketing your business and expanding it. But there are a whole lot of other approaches available via podcasts, books, and the like.
If you have any other ideas for building your email list, make sure to go over to the Startups for the Rest of Us podcast website and add them into the comments at the end of the post. If you have any others that you want to add to building your email list from zero to 1,000, please feel free to go over to Startups for the Rest of Us podcast and to the website and add them into the comments. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.